Before we dive into today's episode, we have an important opportunity to share with you. Every clinic has one, that person who goes above and beyond, whose dedication truly shapes the future of veterinarian medicine. Nominations are officially open for the 2026 DVM 360 Veterinarian Heroes Awards. Since 2021, this program has celebrated the compassion and leadership of professionals across every corner of our field, from surgeons and emergency clinicians to the technicians, practice managers, and client service representatives who keep everything running. If you know a colleague who deserves to be recognized for their extraordinary impact, we want to hear their story. You can use the link in the show notes to submit your nomination. The deadline is Thursday, April 30th, and the winners will be honored this August at Fetch Kansas City. Help us elevate the best in our profession. Nominate your veterinarian hero today.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
I'm sure you heard the terms high value treats or what a good boy, what a good girl. Let me give him a treat. But we could do beyond the treat. Did you know that? I'm going to probably learn along the way with you. So welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. And we have the one and only Dr. Chris Paco joining us in the house, board certified veterinary behaviorist and one of my best friends. How are you, my friend?
You know, Dr. Christman, I'm doing fantastic. Thank you for asking and thank you for having me on. I am thrilled to be having this conversation today.
Well, we love having you with us. And those of you that don't know him, where are you? No, I'm just kidding. He's a board certified veterinary behaviorist, international speaker, business owner, educator, musician, perpetual problem solver, just an incredible human being in and out of the profession. And you can check all of his work out and all the consultations that he's done and further information on his website at drpachel.com. That's drpachel, P-A-C-H-E-L.com to learn more. And I want to get into this, Dr. Paco, because, you know, I'm just as guilty as probably many of you tuning in about this, is that I know the difference between using a high value treat versus regular treats, but let's just kind of start from the beginning. Is why use food in general?
Yeah, the shortest and easiest answer is because dogs love it, generally speaking. And obviously some of this will speak in sort of broad brushstrokes here, but food is one of those things that is what's considered a primary reinforcer. What that means is that we don't have to teach dogs to like it. It's not something that we have to do a lot of advanced conditioning to be able to then leverage as a reinforcer. And by reinforcer, I mean something that is a consequence that strengthens or increases the behavior that came immediately before that consequence, that reinforcer was given. And so food is a primary reinforcer, which is kind of the technical jargon to say, yeah, dogs like it. They're willing to work for it. It strengthens behavior. And the other reason why we often use food and then the higher value foods is that it's consumable, which kind of makes sense. We're talking about food. Of course, they eat it. But that means they perform a behavior. We deliver food. They eat the food. The food now goes away. And the question in the dog's mind is, if I would like some more, how do I show up to get more of that? So because of that consumability, it's something where in a given training session, we can do high numbers of repetitions, unlike some of the other reinforcers that we might use that might be longer duration or harder to kind of give and take away. And it gets kind of messy and kind of clumsy in some cases. So there's a lot of reasons to use food as part of training. But there's also reasons not to use food, which we can certainly get into.
Yeah, I want to back up a little bit more on this, too, because just kind of breaking down the basics to, because I sat in your lectures and you do a great job describing this. And I want to share this with the listeners tuning in about the definition of positive reinforcement.
Yes. So positive reinforcement, it's a word that gets thrown around a lot. And I think sometimes it gets misconstrued to mean I'm being really nice to my dog, or I'm doing things that I think my dog would love. And that's often part of it, but really at the scientific level, not to get too geeky about this for a second, it means positive. We added something. There was a consequence that we added to the situation, we added it to the equation, we added it to the dog's experience. And reinforcement means not necessarily even that they liked it. It literally means the behavior increased in frequency or intensity or duration. It got stronger or greater in some way. So food being an example of something we give, and if the behavior increases, then we can say that that behavior was positively reinforced. And so it's a little bit of a technical jargon, but I think it's really important to remember that because if we're trying to use any sort of reinforcer, whether it be food or something else, the question that we have to be able to ask ourselves is if we are attempting to reinforce a dog for something very specific, is that behavior changing? If not, guess what? Spoiler alert, your dog didn't actually find that thing that you did to be reinforcing. And we got to go back to the drawing board. We have to get more creative to figure out what would be reinforcing for this particular dog.
But guess what happens though? Some pet owners will still cave in and give them the high value treat or whatever, and thinking like, yeah, I can jump on you then because I got what I wanted. And that's why I think it's important that you describe what a positive reinforcement behavior is because the dog's like, well, I'm just being told and you're giving me more and more and more. And this is great. I'm going to keep doing what you want me to do. And I'm going to jump on you because I got what I wanted.
Well, and absolutely. And, when sometimes if we're not selective about when we're giving that reinforcement, don't get me wrong, your dog's still going to love it. I'm hanging out, I'm doing stuff, I'm doing what comes naturally, and I'm getting fed. Like, great. All things good, right? Your dog's going to have a good day, which we might say, oh, cool, that's enrichment. That's your dog having a great day. But if we're actually using food or any other reinforcer to actively and selectively change or modify or strengthen behaviors, it pays to be that much more intentional about it to say, yeah, what am I reinforcing? And is it working?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I know some people out there are like, well, food is the only driver to give positive reinforcement. And there's not. There's some creative solutions that are out there. So share with us what that may look like.
Yeah, so the easiest way to think about this, and I have to tell you, every time I use these examples, every time I give a lecture, I'm talking to a pet owner and I'm saying, okay, and then they did the behavior, and then we click and we treat and we do the things. Every single time I get this question that says, but what if I don't want to use food? Or what if my dog isn't food motivated? Or she's already a little heavy. I'm a little bit concerned. Or she's got pancreatitis. What do I do? Right? These are all reasons why we might want to be more creative about that. And so the next question that I always ask is, okay, if we gave your dog your Amex, if we gave your dog your Visa and the opportunity to buy any sort of thing or experience, what would they buy? Is it a walk in the woods? Is it a new squeaky toy? Is it quiet time in front of the fireplace? Is it a chin scratch? Is it what? What would your dog do? And we can, obviously we're not going to give them your Visa and turn them loose on, the shopping network, but you can watch them and say, if we turn them loose in the world, what do? Do they run? Do they sit still? Do they interact? Is it social? Is it environmental? Those are the things that light your dog up. Anything that lights your dog up can potentially be leveraged as a reinforcer. Now, I want to be very clear before we get into some of the nuts and bolts of this. I want to be very clear that I'm not saying we have to withhold all of the good stuff and we only give your dog good things when they've done the right behavior. This is not withholding. This is not restricting. This is not any sort of archaic means of I'm the alpha and I control your world. This is simply saying, I'm going to give you all that stuff anyway. Can I just be more intentional and more mindful of when I do it? When I time it, the consistency with which I deliver it, so that I'm doing two things. You're loving life, and so we're enjoying that, and the leveraging of those positive, enjoyable things strengthens the behavior that I want to see more of as we go forward together in that collaborative learning model.
Interesting. And what are some things that you find that have been that have worked for dogs?
Yeah. So I'm going to give you a couple of examples from my own dogs. So some of you who have followed me over a period of time know and loved my previous dog, Cornelius.
Yes.
Great, handsome, photogenic, made me look good, bull terrier. For him, the opportunity to simply engage in training exercises was actually a huge reinforcer for him. And especially training, he loved slamming his nose into things. Again, bull terrier, go figure.
Right.
So giving him, literally giving him a cue was a reinforcer. So for him, it could be something like that. For my new dogs, I now have two little terriers, so adorable, Loretta and Wallace. Wallace, if I could give him the visa, he would be like, just give me things I can lick. I want to lick you. I want to lick you all over. Just give me the opportunity to lick. Now, I actually find that annoying, so I'm probably not going to leverage that as a reinforcer. But for him, I would say, cool, you did a good thing. Cool. Here's my hand. Here's my arm. Lick away, little buddy. That would be one of the fastest ways to train him. For Loretta, tug. She is an absolute little predator. So for her, when I ask her to do something, if I present a toy and we're now tugging and doing that sort of interactive terrier type gaming, she's all in. And again, it's not only just enjoyable, but it strengthens the behavior that came right before it. If I'm leveraging that as a, you did the thing I asked, amazing, thank you, here's your reinforcer. Boom, we put those two things together, behavior consequence, behavior increases because it was enjoyable, and we're off to the races. And now we're changing behaviors along the way.
And not to get it twisted, that she can play tug when she wants to, of course, but this is on your terms. It's agreeable, acceptable, the fact that she's doing something great, that you're snapping that photo, that click moment, and giving her something that she enjoys right then and there, right?
Yeah, you nailed it, Adam. It's that idea of leveraging it. So another example that I will sometimes use is Loretta loves to be able to charge out the sliding patio door to go chase off the squirrels, those terrible, nasty, offending squirrels from the yard. So literally opening the door and giving her access to the yard is a reinforcer. Now I'm going to do that on an average day, probably 57 times over the course of the day. So I'm not saying withhold that, but if there's a behavior that I want to work on, I now have 57 opportunities per day to go, cool, can you touch? Can you sit? Can you down? Can you just make brief eye contact? Whatever it is that we're working on. And then I say, what a good dog, Loretta. Knock yourself out. Here you go. So it's a way of leveraging many of the things that we're already doing, but because of the laws of behavior, adding that consistently as a consequence increases the likelihood, the speed, the duration, the frequency. It strengthens that behavior in a magical way. But it's
I
not
love
magic,
that.
it's
It
just
is
reinforcement.
magic. You're right. That our neighbor, she has a German Shepherd, and when she was training her, it's funny, she could have 1,000 different green tennis balls, but this one tennis ball was the one that just stuck with her. And so when she was training her to do command work and whatever it was, this was the one that she was looking for her quote unquote air quotes here, a treat. Because when she did it, she gave her the command, yes, and she gave her the ball, and she just went around, did the zoomies, and so excited. And to this day now, she's looking for that ball when it's fun, just normal time, not just because, but just to engage and enjoy the human animal bond. But I think that's such a great example of just not using a treat. It was a special tennis ball that this dog just absolutely enjoyed and bonded with, and knew that that's what she wanted during those particular times for training.
Absolutely. And it's something where I think our only limit is creativity, right? Look at your dog. What did they do? If you gave them the opportunity to do whatever they wanted, cool. That's what your dog really enjoys. Again, not withholding that as an opportunity, but leveraging it. And again, I'm not saying, just going back to that door example, I'm not saying that I make Loretta do something every single time she goes outside. No, that's ridiculous. I don't have time. I don't need that level of consistency. But some of the time, I do. Simply as a way of saying, cool, I want to work on some stuff, and this is something you find meaningful. Cool. Let's put those two
Yeah.
things together.
Put it together. You brought up something earlier I want to touch on is timing, because I think from a trainer's perspective or just a pet owner's perspective, they always ask like when is that magic moment happening? Because sometimes you lose them, that eye contact gets lost and off they go, and then you give them a reward and they're like, what is this for? What did I do? Right? Can you share with us a little bit about how important timing is for a positive reinforcement?
Absolutely. And there's a couple of different layers here that if I'm using, I'm going to go back to food just for the easy example here. If I am teaching a dog to sit as a basic example, and I ask them to sit, I'm assuming they know kind of know what that means a little bit at least already. I ask them to sit, their rump goes down, the head comes up, right as that butt hits the ground. Ideally, if I'm leveraging food, I want to get that food into their mouth probably within a second or so. Now, I don't have to be like right there and startling, but timing matters. Anything more than a second, especially for a relatively novice learner from on the dog side of things, anything more than a second, he might have sat. But now he's taking a look at the window, or now he's starting to think about something else. And if that's when I time the reinforcer, that's what's going to be on his mind. That's where that connection is likely to be made. So I'm trying to tie it as closely in time as possible to the behavior or the association that I'm trying to help them make. Now, one of the things that we can use, and you mentioned this even when you were talking about the green tennis ball and the shepherd, you said, and then the owner would say, yes, and then would deliver that tennis ball. That's a great example of using what we call a secondary reinforcer. And it could be a yes, it could be a, or a tongue click, it could be a yip, it could be a clicker, it could be any number of things. That basically says it's almost like taking a snapshot of that moment right when your dog does the thing or makes that association, and it functions as a bridge. It lets your dog know right there, that was the thing that I'm gonna pay you for in the thing that matters to you, but it buys us just a little bit of time. So, for an example, if I had a dog that I wanted to, maybe I'm working on teaching them to do an outrun, you run out to the end, you run around that traffic cone, and then you come back to me. I don't know why we'd want to teach that. There's a lot of reasons, actually, but in this case, that's what we're doing. If I'm trying to say, I want to reinforce that dog the moment they round the cone, I'm not right there to give a food treat. But if I've used a marker or a secondary reinforcer, I can mark the moment they do the right thing, and then the dog knows payday's coming, and they come flying back in to get that reinforcer. So there's a lot of ways to put these things together, whether we're using food or not, but that secondary reinforcer builds in a little bit more of that time. It's a little bit more of a tricky concept for beginning trainers or beginning learners, but it's really powerful when we leverage it.
Yeah, it really is. Funny story, when I was training Capone, I used the word yes as a secondary reinforcer. And and then I'm just casually talking to people in the house, whatever. I'm like, yes. And he's like, what? Where's my cookie? Where's my treat? So I always have to, now I spell out the word, like
Right.
YAS, because he's so in tune to the word yes for that secondary reinforcer. No one's gonna happen. Fantastic.
And that just goes to show the power of reinforcement. He made that association, which means that for him, the food was meaningful.
Right.
It was worth it to notice whenever that word was used, which means if he's looking for opportunities to get that yes, that's gonna have an effect on shaping of behavior. And the reason I really bring that up and to stress that is that I think for so many times we have folks who are saying, how do I make my dog stop fill in the blank? Stop barking, stop jumping, stop digging, stop chasing the cat, stop whatever. And it's a valid question if the dog is doing something that is unsafe or problematic in other ways. But a different way of asking that question would be to say, is there another behavior that I could reinforce with a yes, with a treat, with something else that would actually shift their behavior? So instead of doing that thing, they're learning, as an example, when the cat enters the room, that's a predictor that mom's about to start a training exercise. I can run over to mom instead, and we're going to do some training work. Now we've trained a replacement behavior, and we didn't have to go down that pathway of thinking about corrections or other things that might actually damage that human-animal bond or might actually cause pain or emotional distress in a really unnecessary way. So the power of reinforcement goes a long way beyond just that click and treat.
Yeah, it really, really does. Absolutely fantastic information, as always, Dr. Pockel. Again, where can we learn more about you?
Best places to drop on over to drpackel.com, drpackel.com. There's going to be information there about all of the different ventures that I'm involved with, whether that's instinct dog training, whether it's animal behavior clinic, whether it's podcasts and webinars and lecture appearances and all of that. It's all curated there, especially on the media tabs. You'll find all sorts of recordings like this
Like
one.
this one.
Like this one. They're
Yeah.
all going to be there for you.
This guy's like the Eras Tour here for behaviorists. He's just going around doing his thing, and you're doing it so well for both the pet owner side of things as well as for our colleagues. So thank you for all the great work that you do, my friend.
Thank you, Dr. Chrisman.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for tuning in, everyone. Don't forget to rate the podcast as we continue to grow this show. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast Podcast with me, Dr. Adam Chrisman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.